I buy a lot of things online. I buy software, I buy books, I buy other things. And it is interesting to me that buying software really requires a person to learn how to use the software. So today's conversation is about learning how to use tools. A lot of life is involved in the process of learning how to use tools, using them effectively, using them to produce desirable results. And this is an area that I am and have been, I'll say, deficient in. It is not something I have skills in naturally, or at least that's what I believe. I think that all the problems are basically rooted in a lack of awareness. So learning how to use tools is really the process of gaining or receiving awareness. Using tools is and has been essential to the overall advancement of civilization, but it's important overall to the improvement of a person's life. If you think of language or numbers or images or directions, north, south, east, west, that sort of thing, and a whole bunch of others, those things are absolutely essential tools. And we will need to master those things, and ideally, that's what education is supposed to help us do. Money and other units of exchange, which of course involve numbers, are essential as well. But I want to talk about craftsmen. I admire craftsmen who use tools in the expression of their talents and their passions. You know, people who can use their hands, or, frankly, tap dancers, people like Gene Kelly and others who can use their feet, Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers. But I go back some years now, maybe a half a dozen years, I can remember being in Barcelona, fantastic city. And Marianne and I were walking on La Rambla, which is the most magnificent boulevard. It is interesting beyond belief. So as we were walking, we were making our way to a famous cathedral that has been under construction for who knows how many decades. But as I walked, there was a guy sitting on the ground, leaning against a building, using a pair of scissors. And I'm watching him, and he's using this sharp pair of scissors, and he's cutting soda cans in such a fashion that they can be compressed, folded down, top pushed down toward bottom, and be made into ashtrays. The elegance of his movements was interesting. There were a couple of people that were filming him, but I just stood there amazed. And when he was working, there was no waste to what he was doing. He did, I guess there was the little flip top was removed. But other than that, everything else was right there. Nothing else was being removed. He was just making a series of cuts, cut, 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 and then compressing the soda can down into a beautiful ashtray. So I watched him do this over and over again. I just like, oh, wow. I wanted, number one, to understand what he was doing and how he was doing it. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, this is cool. I want to do this when I get home. So in order to ensure that, at least in my thinking, I bought a half a dozen of his ashtrays just so I could look at the finished product when I was working with a soda can back home. And easy enough to think that. And maybe, as you might expect, and maybe as I should have expected, the process was much more difficult than it appeared. You know, things to people who have mastered a process, and you watch them and go, oh, this is easy, this is easy. Well, it's only easy because they have invested whatever time and energy necessary to get to the point of mastery. And so watching a master in action is not the same as replicating a master. So when I got home, I tried, and I tried to do it, but I thought, oh, my scissors are the wrong kind of scissors, and they're not sharp enough, or, you know, anyway, I tried, and And ultimately, I gave up and said, well, I don't know. Maybe I don't have the skill. Maybe I didn't understand it. Maybe I don't have the physical intelligence to be able to make the cuts in the right way. Maybe I just lack awareness of what is going on here. Or maybe I would just need to practice over and over and over and over again. In that process, I would have learned to use the tool. I decided not to do that. Years before, I had an Uncle Bill. He was the younger brother of my mother. He was a carpenter. When I was in high school, I was bigger than Uncle Bill. I was stronger than Uncle Bill. And one day he and I were working together and we were nailing nails into wooden boards. And I quickly noticed that Uncle Bill was doing things differently. When he was hitting a nail, he was hitting it two times, boom, boom, and he was driving the nail flush. While I was bigger and stronger, I was hitting the nail four times, five times, sometimes six times. Worse still, Uncle Bill only hit the nail. He didn't bend the nail over. He didn't hit the wood. He didn't miss. I was like, oh, wow. So his skill, his knowledge of how to use a hammer, and another time I watched the same process when he and I were both using a handsaw to cut through planks. He was zoop, 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 and he was done. And I'm going on, and I'm efforting like crazy. And I'm going, this obviously is not about bigger and stronger. This is about something else, knowing how to use a tool. So he could use a hammer, he could use a saw, and I bet any number of tools that he had in his tool chest, every one of them he would have been able to use more skillfully than me. And it kind of amazed me to make that transition, I suppose, from this is all about strength, this is all about big, this is all about power. No, it's not. No, it's not. The other day, I spent 1 minute searching the internet on this topic, and that idea of searching for 1 minute might be a clue to one of my challenges about learning how to use a tool. But anyway, this is what I searched on. How to learn to use tools. How to learn to use tools. That's what I put in the search box and Googled it. I found an interesting article, but it wasn't really what I was looking for. What I wanted, and the way I like to learn, I wanted a list or a bunch of bullet points of the process of learning how to use a tool. I don't care whether it was an intellectual tool or whether it was a physical tool like you would use in a workshop or some other device like a computer or a calculator. Whatever it is, I wanted it to be in bullet point forms that made it easier for me. And it struck me is, I like mind maps. I like mind maps to empty my mind about a particular topic because it's easy to rearrange. But I like mind maps for high-level explanations of ideas and processes. I would love to subscribe to a service that said, here, you want to know about anything? You can look at the five most important points about this topic. And if you're interested, you could then look at the top 10 most important points about that topic. And you're interested more, top 20, then top 50, then top 100. And that would enable a person like me, at least that's what I think, to look at something and go, okay, just give me the 5 points. And it's like, wow, this is interesting. Okay, give me more. Oh, this is way, way interesting. Give me more and more and more. And then we would go on, theoretically, to learning as much as we could in order to gain mastery of that particular topic. But that's how I want to see stuff. Bullet points, a list, a mind map. But I couldn't find that. So to learn how to use a tool most effectively, I'm thinking we would want to do certain things. So I made my own list. Well, probably not comprehensive, but I needed to see if I could give myself what I was looking for. Number one, know the name of the tool. It could be a saw, it could be a hammer, it could be a checkbook, could be a piece of software, could be a car, could be a lawnmower, could be anything, but you need to know the name of it. So I was like, okay, that's, I got the name. Number two, I think we need to be able to see this tool, at least in our mind's eye, but ideally, we would want to make physical contact with it. We would want to be able to touch it. Three is, know what the tool can do, in not in details, but in high-level terms. What's the point? What's the point? And if we could get the point, if we could see that, then we're like, oh, well, that's something I want to know more about. That sounds like it's valuable to me. And then the fourth point is to know how to interact with the tool. Maybe to continue touching it or talking to it or using it, turning it on, turning it off, lifting it up, shaking it. Whatever you need to do in order to interact with it to get to the point where we feel equal to it. Years ago, I was like one of the early users of personal computers, even before the IBM was out. The IBM Windows computers didn't yet exist. People would come to me and say, how do you use a computer? And they would be terrified. They wouldn't. They'd have their hands in their pockets or behind their back. They were afraid of touching it and then causing the world to explode or something. First order of business, here, pick up this keyboard. Hit it, rub it, touch it, feel it. Pick it up, set it down, pick it up, set it down. Like, well, the world did not come to an end, so I think we're safe. Whew. And I could see them relaxing, just knowing that the idea of them destroying something, breaking something permanently, pretty much was alleviated. The fifth point was to know how to use it ineffectively. Know how to do something wrong with it. Now, I developed a lot of skill in that with regard to a hammer. You know, you hit the nail not dead center, not directly on it, but at an angle. Oh, bent it, tore a hole in a wood, yep, that sort of thing. Miss it entirely, hit the wood. So if we know the edge of the road, if you will, if we know how wide the boulevard is, if we know how wide the lane is, okay, if I avoid this and I avoid that, in between is really what I want to be doing with this particular tool. I kind of see that as a lane in a highway. If I label one edge rigidity, inflexibility, and the other chaos, it's like, okay, somewhere in between rigidity and chaos is this flexible movement that I'm going to have as I engage with whatever tool it is I'm using. Point number six is to know the benefits of knowing how to effectively use the tool. So there are benefits to knowing how to use the tool, but knowing what those benefits are to know how to use a tool, it's like, oh yeah. Yeah, I'm going to keep at this, and do whatever I need to do in order to gain a level of effectiveness or maybe even mastery. I noticed this with some software. There are several things that there are more than several pieces of software that I want to learn. One of them is Camtasia. That's on my to-do list for today. The thing does a million things. And by virtue of that, it's easy to get overwhelmed. It's like, okay, I need to simplify what it can do and how that's valuable to me. Okay, got it. And what's the next thing can it do and how is that valuable? Okay, got it. And the next thing, yep, got it. And so on. Because there's so many facets to so many of these tools, certainly software, that you've got to be able to approach it from a certain angle so you can assimilate it a bit by bit. And then the eighth point I have is practice, evaluate what just happened as you practiced, adjust if necessary, right? And if I had any sense, I would have watched Uncle Bill and watched how he was leveraging a hammer, letting the hammer do the work instead of my arms and shoulders and whatever else I thought was necessary in order to propel that hammer to drive the nail into the wood. So we would adjust and then practice and then evaluate. And if we needed to, adjust again and keep going. Practice, evaluate, adjust, practice, evaluate, adjust. Not much different than so many different processes in our lives. On the other hand, if I had a little bit more sense, I could have, and we would have, put ourselves in the presence of a person who had mastered the tool and allow him or her to teach us. I could have said, Uncle Bill, watch what I do and then guide me to do it like you do it. Show me how you do it and help me learn to do it the way you do it. But I noticed this trend. Can't tell me anything. Couldn't tell me anything. I make this joke about Costellos, but it's primarily about me. You can always tell a Costello, but you can't tell them much. It's like, nope. And I think maybe that's a man thing, right? Don't you want to ask directions? No. I'm going to wander for 40 years or 4 hours. No, I'm going to, right? That bumping into walls and so on. But if we can put ourselves in the presence of a master and be open to receiving their guidance, that would be so much easier in so many different circumstances. And maybe that's really what's required in the world for a lot of people, because there's so much information. There are so many tools that are happening minute by minute. And look at all the marketing emails you get. I certainly look at mine and go like, holy smokes. How would you ever spend the necessary time to gain mastery of every one of these things if you bought them? And if somebody could come along and say, if you want to master this tool, you need the following. That would be a really, really good product. Here, I'll help you master this tool. Boom. I'll help you master this tool. Boom. But what tools do we need to master, or at least be effective at, in using them? Starting at the most fundamental, we need to be able to use our five senses, and our hands, and our feet. You go, oh yeah. I like to be able to see, to hear, to smell, to taste, touch. Yep, and I like to be able to walk. I'd like to be able to touch stuff and identify what I'm touching. Yeah, that makes sense. Then we're going to want to know how to use our bodies to move, to interact, to communicate, to go from point A to point B, to give hand signals to somebody. You know, come here, stay away, shrug your shoulders. All kinds of signaling with the body occurs if we know how to do it. And we're going to want to know how to use our minds. We're going to want to know how to use our hearts, our thoughts, our feelings. And, of course, these most magnificent tools, we're going to want to learn how to use our imagination, our creativity, how to use our attention, intention, and our will and purpose. If we can identify, oh, yeah, I have an imagination, I'm creative, I can control my attention, I can place it here and keep it there for a while, and my intention is pretty clearly focused from time to time, and I have a will and purpose. After we learn how to use these tools that we come standard, those things are standard in the package, you go, yeah, I'm equipped with those, so are you. Then we can direct our attention to learning tools that are external to us. Learning tools that are external to us, cars, checkbooks, hammers, saws, requires a person to be present. Now, you go, that sounds pretty obvious, but my opinion is that not everybody is fully occupying their bodies. They're not 100% in their bodies. That makes sense to me now, if that's true, that we're going to want to correct that condition. I've read about and I know studies that talk about how to increase the intelligence of people and children. And whenever I see or hear a about or even witnessed parents rubbing or massaging the toes, the feet, the legs, the fingers, the hands, the wrists, the arms of infants. I'm thrilled. I think those forms of loving contact make it so much easier for the being, the baby, to take occupancy of their little baby physical body. They are being welcomed into that body. Last night I was reading an article in the National Geographic that's some months old now, talking about how babies' brains develop. And some of it was very heartening, talking about reading to a child, touching a child, and what it does to brain development and language skills. And then what happens when people don't get read to, don't get exposure to language, are not talked to, and are not touched, how the IQ plummets to be below normal levels. So, on the one hand, if we could control that with infants, that's heartening. But on the other hand, in so many cases, that is not happening, and that's kind of painful and discouraging. When we are physically in our bodies, right down to the tips of our fingers and down to the tips of our toes, and are centered, I think we're going to move and function more fully. If we're not in our vehicle fully, if we're not in our bodies fully, we're increasing the risk of accidents. A few years ago, I had a woman who wanted to work with me as a client. And her issue was she was prone to falling down. She fell down the stairs. She would fall down when she was walking. She would trip over stuff, all kinds of things. And she didn't know why she did it. She owned a business in the hospitality area, right? So like a little resort, fishing resort. And so she had a million and one things to think about and to do every single day, all day. After talking to her for a while, this was my diagnosis. She got ahead of herself. When she was walking down the stairs in the morning, her mind was in the kitchen of her business, checking supplies for the day's meals and figuring out what she had to order and what the staffing was going to be, and she would fall down. Her mind was one place, and her body was another place. And I think that this dislocation of thinking and feeling from the body is the leading cause of accidents of all sorts. Another way to say this, we are not present with and in the tools that we are using. And, of course, her tool was her body. When you're walking, that's your tool. Your body is your tool. And if you're not in it, mentally and emotionally, you run the risk. I think it's real easy to understand that automobile accidents, you look at a person in an automobile accident and you go, well, I notice his body sitting there behind a wheel, but in a conversation, where were you? I was sitting here in the car, driving my car. No. Where were you mentally? Were you somewhere else? Oh, yeah, I was in a meeting from yesterday, and I was in a meeting that's going to occur in an hour. I was arguing with somebody over burnt toast. It's like, mentally one place, physically another. That's not the way to use a tool. Several months ago, I was getting out of the shower, and as I stepped, I put my heel on the floor mat, and the floor mat went out from under me, and I hit the floor so hard on my right hip. And I was thinking of something else. I wasn't thinking about getting out of the shower. I was doing that on automatic pilot. There's a problem. And if I realized if I had stepped straight down on that floor mat, no problem. But I hit it at an angle, and that was bad news. So it's like, oh, I was so busy thinking about this thing I was going to do. And so my mind was an hour ahead of where my body was. And that resulted in that fall. That's a problem. That's a problem. I believe we have a whole series of problems with tools. So, as I am prone to do, I made a list. Number one, we overestimate the importance of thinking. Two, we underestimate the importance of feeling or sensing. So thinking is this stuff we believe we do with our heads, and we can travel huge miles, we can use our imagination, we can be elsewhere while our bodies is still at point A. And that leads to this underestimation of the importance of feeling what our bodies are feeling. In our culture, I think we overvalue our minds and we undervalue our bodies. If you turn around and look at America, I bet this is true. You go, what is the education level today? Let's use in 2000 and compare the average education in 1900, those 2 years. We will go, oh, we have a much higher level of education in 2000. And what about the body? Oh, we have unbelievable levels of diabetes, obesity, arthritis, cancer, on and on and on and on. Way more than we had in 1900. Like, Why? Because the technology helps us discover all these diseases that are being invented? Or because of neglect, our undervaluing our bodies? I think that's the issue. We listen to our minds and our egos too much, and we don't listen to our bodies enough. The seventh point, our minds may not be the best receiver of awareness. The other day I heard somebody say, thinking is a low vibration, low consciousness activity. You go, Well, advanced people, I'll say advanced spiritually and mentally and emotionally, those people meditate. Now, meditation is not really about thinking. It's about not thinking. The healing codes, to be most effective, in my opinion, requires us to not think and open and allow to receive, to allow this higher level of awareness to penetrate our consciousness. And we're not doing that with our thinking. If we can get our thinker out of the way, I think we're going to be much better off with that. This mind-body imbalance of attention leads to all kinds of health problems and unhappiness. You find me somebody who's happy in their body, I think a lot of good things are then going to flow from that particular point. Whereas you find a person who's doing a lot of thinking, but is unhappy in their body. Yeah, I'm thinking they're not going to be that happy overall. As a person who's played golf, I recognize this as a challenge, and even other things, trying to learn how to play the piano or learn how to play the drums. Trying to control the body through the mind is unworkable. That's unworkable. But in the day, you perhaps are familiar with this concept, management by objectives. I'm thinking back in the 70s or maybe in the 80s, this was a popular buzz phrase in the corporate world. Tell me what we're trying to accomplish. Give me the objective, then get out of my way. Trying to play golf by thinking every single movement through guarantees a poor performance. Watch somebody play the piano on, PBS, on public television, and watch their fingers move. Nobody is thinking that fast. That body knows what to do. It's been trained. Somebody gave it the objective to learn this piece or to perform this activity. And then the body takes over. So trying to use the mind to control that, not a good idea in my opinion. It takes time to learn to use tools. It takes time. Not realizing or accepting this leads to frustration. I mentioned a little while ago, I searched for about 1 minute. Wow, that's not really a high level of attention or intention or will or purpose. You got to go, that's kind of ADD almost. Like 1 minute? 1 minute? Yeah. It's occurred to me, I haven't done this, but it's occurred to me, I need to commit to a piece of software 2 hours. Just say, you know what? I'm going to devote a steady 2 hours to this. I'm going to try to figure out this software, and I'm going to do it within these 2 hours. Now, it would be wonderful. It'd be wonderful to do that. And that brings me to the next point. We need to learn how each of us learns most effectively. If you know how to learn, for you, not for somebody else, but if you know how you learn, and you need to learn, how information has got to be represented for you to get it and to make it your own, that will serve you for the rest of your life. If we could do that, that would be amazing. I think people who don't know how to learn are at terrible disadvantages. People think that once they graduate from high school, their learning is done. Yikes. That's just the very, very beginning. And from that point on, in order to continue growing, you got to continue learning. And if we can figure out how we learn, we're in really, really a much more positive place. I think the problem with tools is that schooling should have been focused on discovering for each of us, here, little boy, here, little girl, let me help you discover how you like to learn. If you know how you like to learn, and you know that there are several other choices, you're in a position to be anything you want to be. But if you can't learn, you can't be much. Like, oh, wow. So what is schooling? Is like, everybody sit there, I'm going to teach you the same stuff in the same way, and for those of you who like to learn this way, good, you're fortunate. For the rest of you who need to learn in a different way, you are at a terrible disadvantage. You're basically screwed. And then you're going to develop self-esteem issues. Oh, something's wrong with me. Something's wrong with me. No. Something is wrong with the schooling that doesn't accommodate children with different learning styles. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that. But nobody really takes the time. Well, I don't... Not nobody. Waldorf School and other schools are particularly Montessori, I suppose. These people are devoted to helping a child explore so they know, okay, I know how to get information into me so it becomes knowledge. The fourth point on this list is that learning really is like constructing a building. In order to construct a building most effectively, you're going to want an image of the finished product or process before you even get started. What's it going to look like? I would think somebody doing a jigsaw puzzle, you know, one of these 500-piece puzzles or 1,000-piece puzzles. Here, put it together. And if you couldn't look at the picture on the outside front cover of the box, like, yeah, good luck to you. Good luck to you. But, of course, you look at that picture and go, got it. Now I know what it is I'm trying to assemble. I think learning is that same way. If we can have the image of the completed thing, then you go, okay. Now, tell me again why I'm doing this. Tell me why I'm doing this. Why do I need to do this? Why do I need to learn this? And if we can understand that why, you go, yeah, okay. And so then what? What are the fundamentals? And knowing those fundamentals first, not the details, because it's easy to get overwhelmed and like, ah, this is impossible, and then we quit. So we're going to go, you know, up this emotional state scale. We don't want to overwhelm somebody and then have them go, oh, you know, this is depressing. It's overwhelming. I can never learn this. I'm in despair and apathy. I quit. No. Just stick with the bare essentials and then move on. Frankly, if we can communicate with the tool, that is, make physical contact with it, or look at the image of it, if, you know, smell it, taste it, touch it, hear it, if we can get that contact going back and forth with, if we're doing energy exchange with it, we're going to be in a much better position. It's like, okay, obviously the key to this energy exchange is to get equal to the challenge. Not you're going to listen to Tchaikovsky's Concerto No. 1 and go, okay, I got it. That's not what I mean. But you listen to it to enough times, and all of a sudden you can start distinguishing particular chords and notes, and you go, I got it. Wow, I love that flow. And over time, it's like, okay, I think I can start learning pieces of this. And that's really the ideal key. You have to be equal to engaging with it, not equal to, I'm done, you know. I practiced that piece for 1 minute, I'm done. Yeah, that's not exactly what I meant about being equal. This idea of getting the mind out of the way, I believe, is a really, really important thing with regard to tools. Is to allow an awareness that we don't possess. It's not up there between our ears, you know, in a neuron pattern that, you know, oh, well, if those neurons talk to those neurons, then I'll have the answer. Yeah, I think that so many cases that is not anywhere near the truth. If we can quiet the thinker and allow awareness that is beyond us to penetrate our consciousness, we're in a much better place. Personally, in meditation, I used to think about God. I'm going to think about God. Not anymore. Now, as I meditate, I try to sense God. So now the mind can just be quiet, sit off to the side. I want to see if I can sense the presence of God. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.